Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
You do not have to be in this world very long before you become aware that there are radically different and diametrically opposed and fiercely competing views of human life. And nowhere are these two views more clearly expressed than in the concepts of freedom espoused by each. The non-Christian believes that Christians are hopelessly enslaved to religion, are all bound up in stultifying rules and regulations, captives, chained to an inhibiting system. Why don't they get rid of all that stuff, they cry. I couldn't live like that. I've got to be free. On the other hand, Christians believe that unbelievers are the ones who are enslaved, captives to sinful desires and degrading practices, unable to pursue a life of righteousness which is necessary to have a satisfying communion with the God who made us. Unbelievers are slaves to sin. Thank God, says the Christian, I'm no longer bound like that. I thank God that I've been set free. And so we have these two dramatically different perspectives, two rival claims as to what it means to be bound and what it means to be free. And the question is, how do we evaluate these competing perspectives and how can we tell which one is correct? And that is exactly what Paul deals with in Romans 6, verses 20 through 22. And we can evaluate each of these claims by the benefits which each gives to their respective followers. We grade the fruit of each, and then we can decide accordingly. And when we do, we will see that there is a freedom that is really a form of bondage and ends in death, and there is a bondage which is really freedom and ends in life. And what we have are two masters to be served. The conditions of their servitude, a description of the kind of service which each requires, and both the short-term and the long-term results of being in their employ. If we are wise, we will take a close look at the evidence the Apostle Paul sets before us as we decide which master is the one that we wish to serve. This section is Paul's response to the notion espoused by some professing Christians, that since we are under grace, we no longer have to be concerned about sin in our lives. That thinking, says Paul, betrays a complete misunderstanding of what salvation entails. And using the extended analogy of slavery, Paul shows us that salvation is a change of masters, a transfer of ownership, which, of course, is exactly what Jesus said when he stated that no man can serve two masters, which is often misinterpreted to say no man ought to serve two masters. But what Christ said was, no man can. It's impossible. By doing this, reinterpreting it to say no man ought to serve two masters, we make Christ's statement an exhortation and optional, whereas Christ makes it mandatory and decisive. No man can serve two masters. It's impossible. And Paul's words in Romans 6, 20 through 22 flow out of the exhortation of verse 19 that explains why we must present our members as slaves to righteousness, even as before we were saved, we presented them as slaves to unrighteousness. And it explains why the exhortation of verse 19 is important, and how it is the Christians are able to obey it. And so two masters, two lifestyles, two destinations, the two types of people in this world, saved and lost, and here we learn what characterizes each and the final results of each type of life. And first of all, we read about the unbeliever's condition, verses 20 and 21. For when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. What fruit did you have then in the things of which you are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. And so Paul describes, first of all, a degrading bondage, slavery to sin. For when you were slaves of sin, that's the condition of the Roman Christians before they were converted. They used to be what? Free to enjoy the pleasures of this world? Well, that's the way they no doubt thought about it. That's what the way many people think about it. But the true picture is they were slaves to sin. And this is a deluding freedom because it is freedom from righteousness. Again, verse 20, for when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. Now, that does not mean free from the obligation of righteousness before God, because all men are under obligation to obey the laws of God and will be held accountable for it. So you weren't free from righteousness in that sense. You weren't free from the condemnation of sin in the day of judgment. You weren't free from righteousness in that sense. But the statement is based upon the principle of slavery that Paul has used as an extended analogy throughout this chapter, and is simply recognizing that slaves belong wholly to one master. A working man, a free man, sells his time to an employer for a portion of his life. He contracts to serve someone for, say, 40 hours a week. I will give you this time, and you will pay me so much in return. Or it may be a contract that doesn't spell out the exact hours and so forth, but it's only a portion of one's life. And when one finishes the obligation that he has to his employer, he then can give some of his time to his wife and to his children, and maybe some of his time to his hobby and other pursuits. And he has many different obligations and many different choices. He's free to serve different interests, but not the slave. The slave belongs wholly to his master, and his master decides how much he will work, how much he will recreate, if he gets any recreation at all, and most slaves didn't. The master decides how much sleep he will get, when he's going to go to sleep, when he's going to get up. The master decides what day he has off, if any. Now, a wise master will no doubt realize that to get the best performance out of his slave, he does need to give him adequate rest, and he probably should give him a day off, and enlightened masters will do all that, but still, they're the ones who decide. The slave really has no choice. He is owned wholly by one master, and that master he will serve. And so this analogy is what Paul is referring to in Romans 6:20 when he says, for when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness, which means free from the mastery of righteousness. You are not subject to the ruling influence of righteousness. You are free from its compulsion. You are free from its desires. You are free from its expectation before the world. It's really a matter of authority. When a slave belongs to a master, that master has authority over him. When a slave is sold, authority is transferred to the new owner, and the old master has no more authority over him. Now, unbelievers often pride themselves in their freedom and deride the absence of freedom as they perceive it in Christians. And that's true in a sense. Unbelievers have a certain freedom with respect to one thing and one thing only. They have freedom from righteousness. They are free from the power and influence of the conduct that pleases God. They are deaf to God's commands. They are incapable of godly responses. And even when they do hear them, they do not have an ability to respond to them. And that's where they are, as Paul puts it in Romans 6:20. For when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness, but that's not a good place to be. That kind of freedom is actually bondage. And so it was a wasted life, an unworthy life. Verse 21, and what fruit did you have? What fruit did you have then in the things of which you are now ashamed? Paul asked the Roman Christians. And there's two ways to understand this verse, depending upon punctuation. And he could be saying you had no fruit, that is, no good fruit, or he could be saying you had fruit, but it was shameful fruit. Only worthless and godless fruit that makes you ashamed. But either way, you understand Paul's words, he's talking about a useless life, a wasted life, a fruitless life, a vain life, a non-productive life that does not achieve the potential for which man was created, or anything even close to it. So which is best, sin or righteousness? Slaves to sin or slaves to righteousness? Freedom from sin or freedom from righteousness? Well, check the fruit. Check the fruit to find out, because we haven't even gotten to the end of the fruit yet. There is the ultimate fruit, which is destruction. That's what verse 21 says. What fruit did you then have in the things of which you are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. The very freedom that unconverted men cherish, which is actually slavery to sin, they just don't understand what it is, that freedom is leading them inevitably, irreversibly, irretrievably, irrevocably, as far as anything they can do, to death and destruction. And only God in His grace and by His power can rescue a person out of this bondage to sin, which in his deception and delusion, for sin does deceive, he thinks to be freedom. He looks at the Christian and says, oh boy, you sure are bound up with all those rules of righteousness and godliness, which he generally thinks of as the rules of the church, you know. You're a Christian, you've got to live by all these rules of the church, all these rules that the preacher imposes upon you. Well, it may be in some legalistic churches, unfortunately, some of the rules are man-made instead of God-given. But Christians are not living for men, they're living for God. They're not living by man-made rules, they're living by the Word of God. And that does look like restriction to the unconverted person who has no appreciation for godliness and righteousness. But the fact of the matter is that freedom, so-called, that the unconverted man has, is actually slavery to sin from which he cannot free himself, and which is dragging him to the precipice of death. And he's going over the cliff, and he is unable to stop himself. There's nothing he can do about it. He's being dragged every day closer to the precipice of destruction, and he is chained, a slave to sin, unable to free himself from that condition. Is that freedom? No, that's slavery. And that's dangerous slavery. If you're in that condition, cry out to a powerful and merciful God to do for you what you cannot do for yourself. Until next week, good day. May God give you His eternal peace.